This is Ahval Online, meeting point of accurate news and free comment on the current affairs of Turkey. Welcome to our podcast series.
Hello and welcome to Talking Turkey. I'm your host, Ahval editor David Lepeska, and with me today is Milena Büyüm, Turkey campaigner for the global human rights advocacy group Amnesty International. Hello, Milena, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
We are speaking on Wednesday, July 22nd, the day after officials from Turkey's ruling Justice and Development Party, or AKP, submitted draft legislation that would push social media firms like Facebook and Twitter to establish a presence in Turkey, which would enable Turkish authorities to access their data on Turkish users and would force the social media platforms to respond to Turkish requests to block or ban content. Already, dissidents have been forced to leave Turkey due to social media attacks and even death threats from trolls that have been linked to the ruling party. The Telegraph reported this last week and pointed to human rights activist Tuna Beklevich and fashion designer Barbaros Şansal as two examples. Milena, it seems to me like gaining greater control of social media would enable the AKP and its allies to use it as an even more potent weapon against its foes. I know Amnesty has written about Turkey's Twitter ban and other online issues in the past. I wonder how you see this draft bill and AKP's online censorship and its supporters' social media abuse.
It's incredibly worrying, of course. The draft proposals are signaling a future that is incredibly dark and problematic in terms of the right to freedom of expression and its exercise in Turkey. Turkey is one of the countries with highest levels of social media usership. The government and its allies use it very prolifically. In fact, just before this recording of the podcast, I was reading President Erdogan's tweets about the murder of the horrific murder of a young woman in Turkey. That
Pınar Gültekin. Yes, we'll talk about
exactly. That soon. Yes, and you know the president from the president down. High-level Turkish officials use social media very effectively from their perspective. So to the idea that social media platforms would be compelled to take down content or else under threat of really heavy fines, reduction of bandwidth if they don't establish representations in Turkey is really, really problematic and is really signaling a really very problematic future for the exercise of the right to freedom of expression and the right to receive information. The media, not social, but the media itself is very much reduced in its diversity over the last several years, and it's very difficult to find, media sources that are impartial, that inform the population with what's going on with the facts, with politics and news, etc. Everything is very, very difficult for the vast majority of the population to have an informed idea or decision-making tools are very much reduced in Turkey. So this adds a very problematic possible next stage of the growing censorship that we've been observing in the country.
Mm-hmm. Also on Turkish social media, we've seen a spike in attacks against prominent women in recent weeks, including venom directed at Başak Demirtaş, the wife of former HDP co-leader and presidential candidate Selahattin Demirtaş, against Meral Akşener, the leader of the Nationalist Good Party, and against Elsa Albayrak, the daughter of President Erdogan, which is reportedly what prodded the AKP to present this draft bill. Meanwhile, Erdogan's government has said it may withdraw from the Istanbul Convention, a Council of Europe rights treaty against domestic and gender-based violence that went into effect in 2014. Turkish conservatives say the convention undermines the family and impinges on traditional cultural norms. But the AKP's potential withdrawal spurred women's rights protests across Turkey this past weekend. Also this past weekend, which you just mentioned earlier, another woman was killed at the hand of her partner or former partner. 27-year-old student Pınar Gültekin was killed in Muğla province, and this too spurred more protests on yesterday, as Turkish women again spoke out against the persistent problem of femicide and violence against women. Melina, despite all the attention paid to this issue in the last few years, all the femicides given widespread coverage in the media, the hashtags gone viral, the outspokenness of groups like We Will Stop Femicide, even Erdogan's involvement, as you mentioned, he's tweeting about Gültekin today. Despite all this, it seems like Turkey has not really moved forward much, maybe has even gone backward on this issue. Is that right? What's your view? How is this proceeding in Turkey?
I think violence against women has been a deep-seated problem in Turkey. I mean, it's a very endemic problem. It's a really shocking issue, especially some of these really high-profile murders, rapes, etc. Indicate how deeply seated a problem this is, and. Mm-hmm. You know, Istanbul Convention, a convention against to end and prevent violence against women, signed in Istanbul, hence its name. The idea that Turkey would withdraw from such a convention would, has been very slow, actually, in implementing it. It's the measures contained in it, which is very problematic. Is really actually adds to the insult and to the injury that that this issue causes women at large in society. The one of the biggest problems is the impunity that goes with this crime, and how the perpetrators of violence against women often get away with what they've done. The judiciary doesn't effectively pursue the perpetrators and punish them. And these are, you know, there is a real problem of impunity when it comes to this crime.
Let me just say, sorry to interrupt, but let me just say that Erdogan just tweeted that he has no doubt that the murderer will receive the maximum punishment.
Yes, in this case, I mean, before, you know, there are women who are seeking protection because of violent partners, husbands, members of their family who are not offered the protection. There are very few women's refugees in Turkey that exist where women can actually seek safety and sanctuary. This is not a readily available option for women who are living in really dangerous situations that could be life-threatening. So before, you know, the murders are the ultimate horrific end to violence against women. There are many women who suffer for years in the hands of violent individuals, of whatever relationship they may have to them, and they don't have a lot of recourse to either protection or actually redress when they try to pursue these individuals, these violent men, in the courts. There is a real problem with that, and the way the judiciary operates. Obviously, in this particular case, because it's so so extreme and so horrific in its detail, the president and other members of the government have spoken out. But the issue goes beyond this particular case. Now, you will remember there have been other very high-profile cases in which the authorities have spoken out, and yet this has not led to a reduction of these cases or, you know, the successful prosecution
Well, let me just ask you. You say that there's a deeper issue. What is the deeper issue? Why do these criminals often, or you know, suspected criminals, get off with a lesser punishment than one might hope for or expect?
I mean, there are laws that perpetrators rely on, that laws that refer to having been provoked, which enables them to enjoy reduction of sentences or the extenuating circumstances as they may be presented of being provoked. I mean, these actually such defenses by perpetrators of violence have also been seen in cases of trans women's murders and violent attacks on gay men. The provocation defense is one that should not exist actually in criminal law. Authorities should examine the facts of the case and decide on the merits of the case, and they often don't do that. There's a lack of awareness among the judiciary of what these types of crimes are and their impact, and there is a lot of societal prejudice that come into play. What did the woman wear? You know, what was she doing? I mean, these are things that the attitudes that actually, unfortunately, enter into the decision making in a case like this in the courts.
Still today.
Yes, still today, and Turkey unfortunately is not either unique either in this case. I mean, there are cases in other countries around the world when it comes to violence against women, rape. You know, Amnesty has done work in countries like Denmark on rape and how rape is prosecuted. This is a worldwide problem. I don't want to single out Turkey. Of course, we're talking about Turkey today.
Sure.
But this is not unique to Turkey, and that is sad. Of course, that is really shocking that around the world women are not getting justice when they are on the receiving end of these heinous crimes.
It's interesting that Turkish conservatives and the AKP are talking about pulling out of the Istanbul Convention right now during this pandemic, during which violence against women in Turkey has significantly increased. What would it mean for Turkey to pull out? How would it have an impact on the ground? How would it impact the safety of women in Turkey in the months ahead?
Legal protections are really crucial, actually, and standards that ensure that women are, can rely on and demand effective protection would be much reduced. I mean, it's got a symbolic impact on the message that it sends to perpetrators of this type of violence. But even though Turkey is very slow in implementing its the measures contained in the convention and has been criticized for that, the fact that it is party to it is really important, and I think it would be a really disastrous step back for women's equality and women's lives, actually, because that's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Last week marked 1,000 days in prison for Osman Kavala.
It's Monday, 27th of July, so it's next Monday.
I've heard a couple different estimations, but okay. Sometime soon or last week marked 1,000 days in prison for Osman Kavala, the prominent philanthropist and activist who has faced three different charges since his initial November 2017 arrest, hours after he was acquitted on charges of attempting to overthrow the government with the Gezi protest of 2013 back in February. Hours after that acquittal, he was charged with attempting to overthrow the government with the coup plot of 2016. There seems to be no better example of Turkey's dismissal of the rule of law and the increasing tendency of its judiciary to seek to silence critics rather than mete out actual justice. What does the Osman Kavala case represent to you? What does it tell us about Turkey today?
Well, it's a travesty of justice, what Osman Kavala has been put through, and it's an emblematic case that also reflects some of the less well-known individuals' experiences in the hands of a judiciary that is increasingly devoid of independence and is incapable of handing administering justice in a fair and balanced way. I mean, Osman Kavala waited 16 months for an indictment to be drawn up. When it was drawn up, and he was accused of having led and financed the Gezi Park protests, the conclusion of which was that he was not guilty. He was acquitted, as you reminded the listeners in February. He was then rearrested immediately under a charge that he had faced in 2017, that of attempting to overthrow the constitutional order related to some equally flimsy and absurd allegations around the coup. I mean, where his phone signal was in relation to somebody that the government believes was involved in the coup attempt, although this person is not has not been convicted or even, as far as I know, tried of such an accusation. That he saw this individual in a restaurant. I mean, these are laughable suggestions if they were not if they did not have such critical and serious consequences. He was accused. He was then remanded under this charge, which wasn't new, but as soon as the 2-year limit was completed with this charge of attempting to overthrow the constitutional order, he was then charged. That charge was lifted. The remand decision under that charge was lifted, and he was now accused, and he now is imprisoned under the allegation that he engaged in espionage. Again, from what we know, that because there isn't an indictment in the case, he doesn't know the detail of what the the remand decision is based on, and yet he's about to mark 1,000 days in prison. So in that time, yes, he was tried and acquitted of a really serious charge, which carries an aggravated life sentence. He was acquitted in that trial. The European Court of Human Rights has ruled, and its ruling has become final, that is, the treatment of Osman Kavala is being pursued with ulterior motive, which is another way of saying this is a politically motivated prosecution and persecution, and that he should be immediately released. This decision became final in May, and yet Osman Kavala is still in Europe's highest security prison, Silivri. It's really incredibly shocking that this should be the situation, and there isn't a current indictment against him. And the second charge that I mentioned has been lifted because there wasn't an indictment under that charge that was drawn up in the 2 years that he faced it. So yes, they are looking for a crime to punish him with, but they haven't yet found one.
I noticed your online campaign, or maybe it was Amnesty's campaign, calling for people to offer a word to describe Osman Kavala and his case. Any particular words or views you might like to share from that?
It's not an amnesty initiative, actually. There is a lot of supporters of the Free Osman Kavala campaign that this is one of the initiatives that they have developed, and of course Amnesty is supportive of the initiatives, and we will not stop calling for his immediate release. Monday is a big peak in that campaign, where there will be a number of initiatives. There's social media messaging, videos of support and solidarity. There's a press conference on Saturday, I think, with some of the lawyers and Osman Kavala's wife. There is a number of activities that are going to take place in the next few days, where we want to draw attention to his plight, his situation. Of course, Osman Kavala is not alone in this situation. There are writers, journalists, lawyers, human rights defenders. I mean, our own case, our own former leaders in Turkey of Amnesty Turkey have just been convicted.
Right. Well, I was just this is perfect lead into my next question. Yeah. Earlier this month, the former head of Amnesty Turkey, Taner Kılıç, was sentenced to more than 6 years in jail for membership in a terrorist group, specifically the Gülen movement, which the government sees as behind the 2016 failed coup. Kılıç was convicted along with three other rights activists, including another former director of Amnesty Turkey, in a trial that lasted nearly 3 years. What stood out to you about this case, and is there much hope that Amnesty and others might find a way to get these activists out of prison before the end of their terms?
They are not imprisoned at the moment. They are at liberty pending their appeal. I mean, they've not Taner spent 14 months in prison, but he was released in August 2018, finally. And he, you know, they none of them are imprisoned at the moment. And the judge in ruling with the verdict, there was no request that they be remanded. So, you know, that is a small comfort, though, because the idea that Taner, İdil, Özlem, or Günal did anything other than defending human rights is anathema. I mean, it's actually shocking. I saw yesterday the reasoned judgment, which I use the word reasoned with a lot of hesitation, because reasoning it does not contain. It's 105 pages long, and it feels, when you read it, like this trial didn't take place. The evidence was not comprehensively demolished, and every accusation roundly disproven by our friends, by the defendants themselves, or their lawyers, and that all these, you know, 12 hearings had not happened. It's absolutely incredible. Even the state's own evidence, you know, the police report that showed that Taner did not have Baylok on his phone, is as if it hadn't happened. It hadn't been submitted to the court, so it is absolutely shocking. It's not acceptable, because, you know, there was no case to answer to detain them, let alone keep them in prison, and then, after almost 3 years, convict them. In fact, it was almost to the day 3 years since they were first detained, the 10 of them, during a human rights workshop on the island of Büyükada in Istanbul. And it is clear to us, and I think to the wider human rights community in Turkey and elsewhere in the world, that we will not rest until they are completely acquitted and all of them are acquitted. It's four of them were convicted. It looks like the prosecutor is intending on appealing two of the acquittals as well. So there will be an appeal by the prosecutor on two of the 11 defenders. We will continue advocating and campaigning for their acquittals in the, you know, there, as you know, there's a two-stage appeals process, the regional court and then the Supreme Court of Appeal, and we will be with them all the way until
they
are.
And when do we expect these appeals to begin? Sorry.
It's very difficult to say, but they have 7 days from the date of the publication of the reasoned judgment, and so the appeals will be submitted, and they can take anywhere. You know, we don't expect a very rapid turnaround of the regional appeals court. To imagine it will be sometime next year. Then the Supreme Court of Appeals process, if these convictions are confirmed on the first stage appeals court, then there is, of course, the Court of Cassation, Supreme Court of Appeals route open to them. But the idea that, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 years down the line, they will still have this horrendous judgment potentially hanging over their heads as a sword of Damocles is unbearable, and it's a signal. It's actually, as the European Court of Human Rights has concluded in the case of Osman Kavala, it's also a signal to the rest of civil society that, you know, agitate or be active or speak out on human rights issues at your peril. We will drag you through the courts. We will detain you. We will imprison you for years, and we will shut you up. And this is truly unbearable. And this situation has to change.
Mm. You mentioned the lack of reasoning in the decision, the 100-some page decision. In a recent interview, Osman Kavala spoke with a Greek newspaper from his prison cell, and he said, quote, "It would not be accurate to conclude that the entire judiciary is under political influence and is ruptured from legal norms. We still witness rulings made in accordance with universal legal principles, especially by the higher courts," end quote. I wonder what you think of this, and if you also see some hope within the Turkish judiciary.
I mean, there is, of course, the judiciary should, in theory, make decisions that are independent of any external interference, and that's the way it should be. The courts should examine the evidence and rule on the basis of that, and uphold individuals who are in front of them, the rights of the individuals who are in front of them. Unfortunately, in such high profile cases, especially when high level state officials, including the president and others, speak and criticize, you know, in the case of Osman Kavala, and this is the basis. I mean, this is written in the European Court of Human Rights ruling on Osman Kavala, with references to the sequencing of, the president making speeches and referring to Osman Kavala, and the courts making the decisions that they have to remand or to remand again. There was the news on the day of the acquittal in the Gezi Park trial that the Council of Judges and Prosecutors was going to open an investigation into the three judges that acquitted Osman Kavala and 8 others in that trial. You know, nothing came of that investigation, as far as I know. But the news that such a thing could happen, because the judges well, I mean, probably the investigation wasn't because they issued an acquittal decision, but it came as they made that decision. So there is no way of disassociating in the head, in the minds of other judges and prosecutors, that this is what happens. You know, it's a high profile case. The president spoke about the only individual in prison with very serious charges, and the judges acquit them, and then they are suspect, so they are subjected to an administrative investigation. How can judges operate freely and independently in a context where this sort of thing happens? It's very, very difficult, and I think there is a huge amount of pressures on judges. There, you know, and these pressures have to cease. They have to really cease in order for them to properly administer justice. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't problems with some of the laws that exist in Turkey, the misuse of the laws, such as the anti-terrorism legislation, which is used in cases where there is no incitement to violence or acts of violence involved, but simply dissenting opinions that are not palatable to the authorities. Individuals are being pursued in the courts under these really serious, severe laws, which have very serious and severe penalties. You know, that the laws there are problematic, but the implementation of them and how the judiciary operates in Turkey is a big, big problem. And there has to be a change in this area. I mean, the judiciary has to be allowed to become independent and you know, free from external pressures and influences.
Just one last question for you, if I may. Preparing for this interview, I visited the Amnesty International website and found the organization's most recent report on human rights in Turkey and several articles on other issues and concerns in Turkey. And the list of offenses, of issues, of problems in Turkey is really long. Curbs against freedom of expression and freedom of assembly, torture, refugee deportations, excessive use of force, abuse by armed groups. There was even a piece on 12-year-olds facing terrorism charges. One headline on the Amnesty site said simply, quote, "We're frightened for friends and colleagues in Turkey." Yes, I am too, as I'm sure are many people listening to this podcast. So what can we do? Those of us on the outside looking in with increasing horror, is there anything we can do to help those dealing with these sorts of injustice? And I ask this knowing that the Turkish government often weaponizes external vocal support for dissidents, pointing to it as evidence that that critic, such as Osman Kavala, for instance, is in cahoots with the West, is plotting with George Soros or something like this. So is there a way to help and not potentially make matters worse?
It's, you know, this is several million dollar question. How can we change things and how can we improve things? I mean, one thing that probably we need to end on this discussion is to acknowledge that there is still a civil society, independent civil society in Turkey that is still raising its voice. People are using their right to peaceful dissenting activities and opinions, exercising their rights despite all the restrictions, pressures, and you know, even police violence. I mean, the scenes of people protesting the murder of this young woman that we were talking about earlier, you know, really being subjected to police beatings and so on just because they are protesting this horrific murder is a daily occurrence. And I think it's really important for Turkey's small but really forceful independent civil society, that they feel the solidarity from all around the world, that that Turkey is not forgotten. What's happening there is in the news, and and people are informed about what's going on and offer solidarity. I mean, 27th of July, for instance, this is a concrete thing people can do. Reach out, look at the Free Osman Kavala Twitter handle, Instagram. There will be a lot of content being shared there. Watch the press conference that is going to be uploaded on YouTube. Details will be shared on the campaign Twitter handle. And you know, send a message of solidarity to Osman Kavala in prison. Again, the details of how to do that are on the campaign website. And we at Amnesty, we will carry on campaigning for, you know, basically for all the, so that campaigning so that all these cases are in the forefront of people's agendas, and until our colleagues are acquitted, and you know, raise our voice in advocacy and in campaigning so that these rights violations end.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for getting that message out. Milena Biyum, Turkey campaigner for Amnesty International. Thanks so much for your time and insight. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.